The question was asked. What happened with the 10 tribes, and how do we understand that in the verses? So, the 10 tribes are discussed in the Navi, in the end of the book Melachim, Kings. So, the Navi describes how the Assyrian king Sanherib came and exiled the northern 10 tribes. What would happen with them? So we're not sure if the Navi gives us a full picture of what happened with them in the exile. The Mishnah says, the Mishnah in Tractate Sanhedrin, Asara hashvatim, aseret hashvatim, the 10 tribes, einan atidin lachzor. They're never coming back, says the Gemara. Now, we have a remnant of them in our midst, meaning there are some people from each tribe still around. But the majority, the millions who were exiled, what happened with them? In a second. First opinion in the Mishnah is, they're never coming back. And that is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Because in the Torah, when the Torah describes the exile that would come, the exile of the 10 tribes in Parshat Ki Tavo, I don't remember which parsha in the end of Devarim. The Torah says, "Vayashlichem el eretz acheret kayom hazeh." Hashem banished them to another land, just like the day. So Rabbi Akiva says, just as the day passes and does not return, you can never go back to yesterday. Yesterday is gone forever. So too, the 10 tribes are going to be lost and gone forever. That's Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva's Rebbe, Rabbi Eliezer, says the verse gives us the exact opposite meaning. Rabbi Eliezer says, just as the day, sunset, sunrise, you have a cycle, it gets dark, but then it gets light again, so too the 10 tribes, even though they've been darkened, they haven't been vanquished. They're still coming back. So Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with Rabbi Akiva. He says that same verse that compares it to the day is actually a verse of hope. Yes, Leo?
I'm pretty sure it says either in Divrei Hayamim or Tanya, maybe both. It says that during the Babylonian exile, we were actually...
Could you speak up? I'm not hearing everything.
I'm pretty sure it says either Divrei Hayamim or Tanya, maybe both, that during the Persian exile, we were actually in contact with the 10 tribes, and actually the tribe of Yosef, part of them, came out of Ezra.
So first of all, why don't you look it up? Here you have a ketuvim, if you want. Look it up, and then let's address it with the text. We'll see which psukim you're referring to, okay? Will you be able to find it? Okay, yes.
So the Ethiopians disagree with Rabbi Akiva.
Okay.
Because they're from the tribe of Dan.
Nachon. And also there's rumors about B'nai Menashe in northern India, the children of Menashe.
Yeah, our rumors about B'nai Ephraim of southern India.
We're finding them again, everyone.
The Afghans have a tradition. Some Afghan tribes have a tradition. Yeah. From like three or four tribes. Yeah.
I know some Bukharians, I think they're of tribe Naphtali.
Okay. Let's see. So we have this Gemara about what's going to be with what happened with the 10 tribes. We'll take questions for a minute and then we'll continue. Yeah.
In Yechezkel 37.
Yeah.
After having spoken of the revival in the desert.
Yeah.
The resurrection in the desert. Yeah. It speaks about a prophecy to Yechezkel, where it says that he should take a stick, two sticks, and upon one of them write Yehuda, and upon another write Israel, and put them together.
Right.
children of thy people shall speak unto thee, saying, will thou not show us what thou meanest by this? Say unto them, thus saith the Lord God, behold, I will take the stake of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and put the staff and the tribes of Israel as fellows, and put them with them, even with a stick, they will die, and make them one stick, and they shall become one in my hand. Isn't that referring to in the future when the tribes will return?
So, okay, so let's address a few other sources, and then we'll get back to the pasuk. Chazal tell us that there was a covenant made with Yaakov that the 12 tribes would be eternal. So that's what I alluded to when I said they're definitely from the 12 tribes among us. The Talmud tells us in Tractate Rosh Hashanah, there was a man who always used to say, judge my case, judge my case. He came from the tribe of Dan. There was a man who used to say, the best place to live is by the seaside. He came from the tribe of Zevulun. The Talmud tells us, we only call, in Tractate Brachos, Ein korin avot el ha-shlosha. You only say Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They are the only patriarchs. So the Talmud asks, why don't we say Reuven, is one of the patriarchs, Shimon? Why don't we say, and maybe you'll tell me I can't call Reuven or Shimon one of my patriarchs because I don't know what tribe I'm from. Reuven or Shimon, you see from the Talmud, it was obvious to the Talmud, we still have descendants of Reuven and Shimon among us, not just Levites, Kohanim, etc. The Talmud in Tractate Megillah tells us that when Chizkiyahu had his issue being surrounded by Sancheiriv, so it says in the verse in Jeremiah, in Isaiah, I'm sorry, in Yeshaya it says, he sent word to Huldah the prophetess. So the Talmud asks, how did he send to Huldah if he had Yeshaya around? What was he doing? He had Yirmiyahu, he had Yeshaya. What was he sending to Huldah? So the Talmud says, oh, the male prophet, he was out pursuing the 10 tribes, bringing them back. So that's why he sent to Huldah. Another opinion is he figured she's a woman, she'll be more merciful, she'll give him a better prophecy. Two opinions in Talmud. But another opinion is that she was his relative. So he knew that she could give prophecy even though... but either way, you see one opinion in Talmud is that the prophets went out in pursuit of the 10 tribes and brought them back. And so that's why I brought you the different sources. We see one thing is clear to the Talmud. A, that all 12 tribes are still among us. B, that there would never be an annihilation of a single tribe. Every tribe would have a continuation. Now, what numbers do we have among us? That depends. One opinion says they brought them all back. The millions came back, they joined the Judean people. And the generally accepted opinion is either that many of them weren't in the exile, or many of them came back. But the general understanding is that the mass of the 10 tribes did not come back. The mass of the, where did they go? So one opinion says they intermarried. One opinion says they were lost at wars. One opinion says they were taken beyond a miraculous stream that throws up rocks throughout the week, and on Shabbat it rests. And in Greek, many words get the word the letters yon at the end, right? What?
I think it's called Shabbat yon.
Okay.
The river where they say they went beyond that river.
Right. So Nachmanides, Ramban, explains that being that many words in Hebrew were given the concluding three letters, yon, so that's why Shabbat, Sambat yon, in other sources is called Shabbat yon, the stream of Shabbat that rests on Shabbat. The Talmud says, Turnus Rufus, the wicked Roman general, asked Rabbi Akiva, how do I know that what day of the week is Shabbos? Maybe during the exile, you guys got confused. Maybe you're off by a day. How do you know what day is Shabbos? So he said to him, well, your wicked father, if you go to his grave, you'll see every day of the week there's smoke coming out because he's burning in hell. But on Shabbos, it rests. So he went to see his father's grave, and he saw it was true. He said, No, that I'm not convinced. So he said, go to the stream Sambatyon, and you'll see every day of the week it shoots up rocks, and on Shabbos it doesn't. So we see there was a stream Sambatyon. But were the 10 tribes on the other side of that stream? Okay. So there is responsa written by the Geonim that a man came called Eldad Adani, and this is recorded, if you want to look it up, in Batei Midrash and in Otzara Midrashim and in other places. There was a man who came who was tremendously learned and said that he came from the tribe of Dan. And he said, there are 10 lost tribes on the other side of Sambatyon. And he said all kinds of fantastic stories. And he said, we never got word that the decree of Esther did not come true. We still fast on Purim. And he said all kinds of wonderful things. He said they have a court system there. They have a king there. He said all kinds of things. And it wasn't clear among the rabbis if he was a charlatan or he was for real. Learned, he was learned. But was he for real or not? It says we don't go by him in halacha. He said all kinds of things. He said if you slaughter an animal and you don't make a blessing on the slaughter, the animal's not kosher. The rabbi said, that's not true. In our Talmud, it says clearly not like that. Or it indicates not like that. And so there are many things where the rabbi said, no, the guy was learned, but we don't rule like him. And our halacha is not like that. Now, did he really come from the tribe of Dan? So some of the Gonim said it could be. So that's story number one. We have a lot that was written about Eldad Adani, a man who came and said he came from the tribe of Dan, from the other side of Sambatyon, and there's a discussion whether he was legitimate or not, whether we accept what he said. I'm talking to you 900 years ago, maybe 1,000 years ago. This is a story we have on record from a long time ago. And then there's another story. And if you guys took me here, so we'll do another story. Now this, okay.
Like, you were giving a list of different reasons why we have a record that, so I just wanted to add, there's one, I know during Fiskio, a lot of Jews, when they're exiled by St. Clair, they actually ran towards Yerushalayim. You actually, within Yerushalayim itself, the walled city, you had a lot of from different tribes.
Okay.
I read that somewhere.
Yeah, it's logical.
Yeah.
So the story goes like this. I heard this story when I was in first grade. This is a story that at least Jewish children in Hasidic schools grow up on. I don't know if in other schools they tell the story, but you'll be able to tell your stories this. The story is told to children about a week before Shavuos, and it is told in segments. It's like a multi-part story, and of course you have to make it very exciting. I'm not going to be so skilled to make it as exciting as the Rebbeim say it, and I don't have the time to draw out the story, but we'll tell the story in a nutshell. The story goes like this. There were Jews who lived in a town somewhere in Europe or North Africa. You don't say that when you tell the kids a story. You have to tell them it was in North Europe. It was a small town with a pious group of Jews and a dedicated rabbi, and they had prayer on the high holidays where people felt like they were in Shemayim. And their chazan was known for his piety. And in that town, well, there was also a tremendous church. And the priest in the church hated the Jews, and he was always looking for plots and plans how to make trouble for the Jews. And one day he went to the king and he said, I want to have a debate against the Jews. And if they win, well then, you'll punish us. But if we win, then either they all convert or leave. And the king agreed. And the king was a kind king. He didn't want to agree. But he was scared of this priest because everyone believed the priest had all kinds of powers. So the king didn't know what he could do. And he didn't feel like he could avoid him. The priest said to him, you don't believe. If you really believe, then you'll let me debate them. And so the king felt he had no choice. So he told the Jews, you have 3 months to get your act together and be prepared. We will call everyone to the Colosseum and have a fantastic debate. You decide who you want to present yourself, who should be the representative of the Jews against this priest. So The Jews didn't know what to do. They asked the king, "We're not interested. We don't want to debate. We'll respect him. Let him respect us. We're not interested." And the king said, "I can't. I promised him I would do it. I see no way out. You better find someone to represent you." So the Jews didn't know what to do. So the rabbi gathered the people into the shul, and they all prayed and they all fasted. And on the third day, they all had a dream. All the elders had a dream. And in the dream, they were told that they should send someone to the 10 tribes, to the lost 10 tribes, and that someone from the lost 10 tribes would be able to debate and win the debate. So they didn't know who should go. So again, they prayed and they fasted, and then a dream came to the rabbi and the elders, and they all came out with Rabbi Meir. And
Rabbi Meir Neira Gula?
Just 1 second. I want to get it accurate. It's been a number of years since I was in first grade. Give me a second. Someone have an art scroll sitter here? Oh!
Sky.
I don't have an art scroll sitter.
Sky's lying.
Okay. Yes. So, Rabbi Meir ben Yitzchak, and Rabbi Meir of the city of Worms, Rabbi Meir Migermaiza. Of the city of Worms, Germany. This story is attributed to him as well, as we'll see in the end of the story. So that he was the famous Chazan. And Rabbi Meir didn't want to go, but they convinced him that he has to. It's a life and death for the whole town. And so he traveled to the yeshiva of Mekubalim in Jerusalem, where they told him, they drew out maps. They sent two people with him from the city who would go with him. And they went to the yeshiva of, I guess it was more than 3 months. Maybe it was a year. They had
time.
No, I don't remember that detail. So we'll say they had a year to prepare for the debate. I don't remember.
Time to get it done.
So they traveled to the yeshiva of Kabbalists in Jerusalem.
Yechim,
and they said to them, what?
Yechim?
Yeah.
That was a good
sentence. What a spardy.
It's the first crusade.
Okay. They traveled, they sent two people with him, and they traveled to the yeshiva of Kabbalists here in Jerusalem, who would sat down and went over the texts until they figured out how they would draw him a map of how he could find the river of Sambation and go and bring bring someone from there who would debate. And then they told him, you should know it's going to be scary. You have to go through jungles, you have to go through deserts, but don't worry, you're going on a mission for Hashem and his people, you're going to be safe. So the two people went with him and they started traveling, and they went with the maps and they're traveling. And again, when I heard the story in first grade, so the Rebbe included lions and tigers and bears, oh my, and how every time the two people with him got very scared, and he had faith in Hashem. It's Hasidus Rebbe, right? He said his psalms, he said his Tehillim, and he was always confident. And finally, they reached the place where they're almost there, by the river Sambatyon. And they see they're a day's journey away, and they hear great noises, and the people with them are trembling, and they're scared, and they tell him, "You want to go closer to those noises?" And he says, "That's where the map leads us." And they come a little closer, and the noises get louder, and the people with them say, "You have the courage to go there?" And he goes, and he continues until he's coming so close that the noise is deafening. And they reach a clearing in the jungle, and they see the stream, just where they were told they would see the stream. And there, the stream is shooting rocks, and they have to keep a distance from the stream because you can't cross that stream. It's a stream of rocks, and it's just shooting rocks, which we might say today lava and whatever. But you'll see, it doesn't fit that it's lava, because the continuation of the story is he tells the people, "Okay, we're sitting, we're camping here. It's Thursday, we're going to wait till Friday." They camp that night, and the next morning, they're waiting till Shabbos, till the sun sets. And while they're waiting, Rabbi Meir is busy writing. And they ask him, "What are you writing?" And he says, "I'm writing two things. Number one, a divorce contract for my wife. I just realized that I am allowed to cross the river in order to bring someone from there. That's pikuach nefesh. So I'm allowed to swim across the river on Shabbos. But I'm not allowed to swim back. So for the rest of my life, I'm going to have to live it with the Jews on the other side of the river."
What means in that? Huh.
Because on Shabbos, you're not allowed to swim across the river. So he said, "Come to our Friday morning class on the laws of Shabbos. We'll discuss why not." So later, we're in the middle of one topic. He says, "I won't be able to come back. And if I can't come back, so I don't want my wife to remain just waiting for me when I'm never coming back. So I have to free her. She should build a life without me." And the second thing I'm writing is a song for the Jewish people, that on Shavuot, when they take out the Torah, they should sing a song about how blessed we are that we were given the Torah, and that is the song we just sang on Shavuot, Akdamot. Akdamot, Mirin Vishar Hayuchuta. Try being awake. Try once Shavuot's morning, like getting a nap or something. So when you take out the Sefer Torah and you're about to read the Ten Commandments, so before we start, we sing a song called Akdamot, which was composed by Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yitzchak of the city of Worms, the famous Rabbi Meir of Girmaiza, who composed all kinds of songs that we sing. So the story goes that this was his final composition before he crossed over the river. And when sun set, so he swam across the river as the sun set, as Shabbos settled into the world. And again, the great Rebbe tells it over nicely to the children, how as the sun set, slowly the rocks started slowing down. And when the sun finally set and Shabbos settled in, as they were singing the songs in honor of Shabbos, things became quiet. It was like they were in the Garden of Eden. Shabbos settled down on the planet. There they were, and the rocks stopped shooting. And Rabbi Meir told them, "Now I have to go." And they said, "Shabbos meal." And he said, "Pikuach nefesh. We have to save the Jewish people. What am I here for?" And when the rocks settled down, as night had fallen, he swam across this river of Sambatyon. And as he comes out of the river, two people see him. And they are these Jews dressed in policeman clothing. And they say, "Shabbos!" And they grab him and they take him to jail. They say, "What are you doing swimming on Shabbos?" And as they take him to jail, he says, "Wait a second, let me explain. I'm a Jew." They said, "We know, of course you're a Jew. Who comes here but Jews? We're taking you to jail." And he says, but I have an important mission. I have to talk to your king. I'm here on Pikuach Nefesh." So they take him to the king. And he tells the king, "I'm from the Jews on the other side of the river. Here's our story. Here's what happened. I was sent to you. You have to send someone back who's going to help us fight and debate and protect our people." And they appointed a man by the name of Rav Dan, who would come back with them. And he told him, "I have two people waiting on the other side of the river. When you swim back, so they will meet you and they'll take you all the way back to Germany to debate on our behalf." And so Rav Dan parted from his wife and family and swam across the river and then was taken through the long journey back to the city. And the end of the story, we'll leave for next Thursday night. The end of the story, the actual debate, that's an amazing story for next Thursday night.
Well, brother, sir, it's true.
I wasn't there. It's been a millennium since then, yes.
Why couldn't he swim back if you're protected when you go to a mitzvah on the way there and the way back?
Protected, first of all, the Talmud says, b'mokom d'shchicha ezeika, and that's in Halacha also, that the idea that shluchei mitzvah inan nizokin, that when you're going to do a mitzvah, you won't be harmed, that's provided that you're not entering an area where shchicha ezeika, where it's there's a high likelihood that you will be harmed.
Right.
A person can say, I'm walking into Jenin, but I'm doing a mitzvah, so I'm going to be okay. No. Talmud says, Mokom d'shchicha ezeika, when you go to a place where there's a high likelihood of harm, there we do not say that shluchei mitzvah inan nizukin.
So there's no harm if the river rests on Shabbat.
That's correct. So that's what we discussed earlier, that there's a prohibition for swimming on Shabbos.
But the pikuach nefesh doesn't protect
There was no pikuach nefesh for him to swim back.
That's what I'm asking, is pikuach nefesh is only the way there, not the way back.
Rav Dan's pikuach nefesh is to swim back. Rav Meir doesn't have to go back. So that's part one of the story. So coming back to our question of the lost 10 tribes, let's summarize what we saw. We saw the Mishnah, which is a slight expansion in the Braisa, that there are multiple opinions as to what happened to the 10 tribes, whether they were lost, which the Braisa expands into two opinions, intermarriage, war, how were they lost? Rav Eliezer's opinion that they're still coming back, they're not lost,
but
and that...
If Rabbi Akiva knew where they were at the end of the day, how could he say they're going to be lost forever?
Let's finish the summary and then we'll see if we have more questions. And from there we evolved into the Talmud tractate Brachos that says in Korin Avot Ela Shlosha, the idea that we have people from every tribe in our midst. We also discussed the Brit, the covenant, that there would always be all 12 tribes. Then we discussed the Talmud and tractate Rosh Hashanah about the people that they knew what tribe they were from. So you see clearly there were people from multiple tribes. We discussed the Talmud and tractate Megillah, the idea that the prophets went to bring back people from the 10 tribes. How many they brought back is in question. But either way, we know we have in our midst people from all 12 tribes. Then we went on to discuss the idea of Sambatyon, the Ramban, that it comes from the word Shabbat, Shabbatyon, this stream that rests on Shabbos, and the Gemara about Rabbi Akiva and Turnus Rufus, where Rabbi Akiva said to him, your father's grave and Sambatyon will prove that Shabbos is, we're keeping Shabbos on the right day. And from there we also went on to this story of Akdamot, of Rabbi Meir of Worms, the story of Sambatyon, that there's a good question whether the story has strong validity or not, but nonetheless, it is a story, and it makes the river of Sambatyon alive in children's eyes and hearts, and it makes Akdamos a special song. So stories have their value in Judaism as well. Stories, even when we don't know how true or valid they are, there's still a value to a story, and we left that story a little bit hanging till next week, Nezachi.